Welcome to Multifamily Rockstars. It's Ryan here. I recorded the following episode with my good friend Ravi Ramachandran from Synchronous Capital. Today's guest is Brian Wilford from Morrison & Head, a national commercial real estate property tax consultant. Property taxes are one of the largest non-controllable expenses on a multifamily income statement and can make or break a deal. Brian shares his thoughts on the trends he is seeing in the property tax market and how to underwrite property taxes in your deals. Please visit lifechangingcapital.com to learn more about the diversification, passive income, and tax benefits associated with multifamily investing.
Welcome to Multifamily Rockstars. If you are new to apartment investing or already experienced, you will enjoy this show. You will hear from the leading experts in multifamily real estate so that you can be a better owner, operator, and investor. Real people, real stories, life-changing. And now, your host, Ryan Christopher Nunes.
All right. Today, we are excited to welcome Brian Wilford from Morrison & Head. Brian is a tax consultant for Morrison & Head. And Brian and I have worked extensively in the past. He has helped me assess a number of properties from a tax perspective. As we all know, taxes are one of the uncontrollable expenses of multifamily properties and multifamily deals. So it's quite important to understand the tax ramifications of deals. And Brian has been extraordinarily useful in helping us assess deals. So with that, Brian, thank you for joining us on the show today. I was wondering if you could take a few minutes and tell us a little bit about your background, a little bit about yourself, what you do, things like that.
Sure. Well, thank you, Ravi. So I grew up in the Houston area and ended up attending Baylor University and got a real estate degree there. And really ever since, I've been in commercial property tax in Houston specifically. And I hold a CCIM designation and also a Texas salesperson license. And I'm currently managing and running our Houston office for Morrison & Head. We have three offices around the state of Texas, Austin, Houston, and Dallas, and we specialize in commercial property tax appeals. And here locally in Houston, the bulk of our portfolio is multifamily. Well over half of the appeals we do are for apartments. And so we're highly specialized, I'd say, in the Houston MSA here locally. For Harris County and the surrounding counties of how they assess properties and react to changes in the market and that sort of thing.
Got it. Thank you so much, Brian, for that introduction. So, Brian, obviously, you know, you work for Morrison & Head. Could you tell us a little bit about, you know, your firm, what sort of, you know, advantages your firm brings to the marketplace, what differentiates you from other firms, you know, your breadth and scope of what you do? Could you expound on that a little bit for us?
Yeah, so I think what separates us from most firms is most firms are either they only have one office and they're only a local operation or they're a national operation and they're kind of spread thin and to try to be kind of a jack of all trades. We are specific that we are only in Texas and we only handle commercial appeals. So we pride ourselves on the fact that we are we're small, we're a boutique firm, and we pride ourselves in the relationships that we have in these local markets. So like I said, we have three offices. So here locally, we have relationships in all these counties that anyone would own properties or manage properties in this area. And I think it kind of sets us apart from most of our competitors in that we have a very intricate knowledge of how these appraisal districts work. And going beyond that, we have good personal relationships with these appraisal districts. So we can get a lot accomplished typically informally. But at the same time, we do know how the system works. And, you know, if a lawsuit or anything like that is necessary, we know how to pursue that and be aggressive. You know, on top of that, we subscribe to a variety of third-party sources, you know, CoStar, TREP, and all these information that we can get for market information. But we also have kind of taken another step. We have the appraisal district's data that a lot of our competitors don't have. And so what we do every year is we actually request, it's legal that you can do a request to these appraisal districts, get all of their information. We kind of do a data dump, and we have all of their comps in essence. We have their income pro formas of how they're looking at these properties and that sort of thing. So, so we've got, kind of multifaceted approach, but really, you know, the relationship side of things is huge, in my opinion, with the appraisal districts and just the knowledge of how they use this data and react to it. But then on the back end of that, just having their information to use against them as well. And if we are doing a due diligence report or anything for somebody buying a property, we know what that submarket looks like currently in terms of comps, what average assessment increases have been, and that sort of thing. So it kind of gives us a leg up, I think, just in terms of data and information, over most of what I see in our competitive market, at least.
Brian, could you provide some color on what you saw for 2021 tax increases in Texas? Maybe break that down by metro, and then just what you've seen as the trends over the past 5 years, and you know, what has caused those trends?
Yeah, so here recently from 21 to 22, probably the biggest increases we've seen, at least in my career, specific for apartments on assessments. I mean, we had the major metros going up 20-30+% in value. And interesting enough, the smaller counties and the tertiary markets, which typically are very underassessed, were going up even more dramatically, 50+%. And, you know, a lot of it really boils down to just the way the tax code is written and how these appraisal districts operate, and that they are trying to accomplish 100% of market value. So what we saw last year in 2021 was a very, very active market in multifamily, especially the second half of 21. And these appraisal districts honestly just reacted to it. You know, and the interesting part that I think a lot of people don't understand is the assessments where they're currently at. Let's say that you're in a county that's at 50% of market value. They're way below where they should be. The comptroller in Texas comes in every 2 years to all these counties and verifies how well they're doing, taking sale information and comparing it to the current assessment of how they're being taxed. And so they call it a ratio study. And it's quite simple, but they take all of the sale information they have, compare it to these assessments, and on a cumulative basis, they have to be above 90% to pass. And what we've seen here recently is with all of these transactions, and just the appreciation so fast, because there's, you know, cap rates compressed and how fast these values increased in such a short amount of time, these appraisal districts generally across the board were failing. And so when that happens, these people are now preserving their own careers because they don't want to lose their jobs. And so they all reacted to it and bumped these values dramatically to try and catch up, in essence, to where the market is. So that's really what I've seen here in the short term. You know, historically, if you look back 5+ years, I would say it was quite different in that we were seeing, call it 5% increases over a few years and things like that. A lot of times you'd have flat values even for 2 or 3 years in a row in some of these counties. And I think a lot of it is based on probably a lack of information in the past. Most people know Texas is a non-disclosure state, so you do not have to give the appraisal district your sale price if you purchase a property. And so when these appraisal districts are trying to get this info historically, one of the only methods they had was CoStar. And CoStar, one, can be inaccurate, but two, just had a lack of information other than some loan amounts typically. More recently, what we've seen is a lot of these counties have subscribed to TREP. And really all it is anything that was agency financed. So Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and there's a lot of info on there. So what they're now getting, and it's been about the past 2 to 3 years, we saw it happen first in Austin and Travis County. It's probably almost 4 years ago. Here recently in Houston, Harris County started it last year, where they subscribed to it. And now looking at 2022, I'm seeing a lot of these smaller counties all over the state have subscribed to it as well. So these counties now have not just your loan information if you went through agency debt, but they also have your appraisal amount. They've got the past 3 years financials. They have a lot of detail that they did not typically have in the past. So, so it's allowed them to have better information at this point to defend these values in essence and get them, like I said, closer to market value. Most of these counties are still not at market value, but they're chasing it and trying to get there. So, it is interesting because we've seen, I think, a very dramatic change in a short amount of time in the past 1 to 2 years with what assessments have done. And, you know, we keep getting the question, will it continue? And, you know, the answer is it depends on the market. I mean, right now, the market still is very healthy and we're still seeing sales at that level, if not above what we saw last year. So, you know, my short answer is yes, at least in the short term, I think. Not that you'll see the dramatic increases so much because I think they are catching up, but you're going to see them continue to have good information and continue to chase these sales and try and get them up to a full 100% of market value.
So what prevents them from just throwing out something exorbitantly high and just saying like, hey, tell me that it's wrong? You know, you have to prove
honestly know
that it's wrong.
That's, you know, it's a good question because I think a lot of people have kind of a misconception that we as representatives of these owners almost go in and give information ahead of time or position a value to these appraisal districts. The reality is we're very reactionary. So what happens is the value is as of January 1st for every year in Texas. And typically in April is when the new value notices come out for that year, with the appeal deadline being May 15th. So when these values come out, nothing prohibits these appraisal districts. There's no caps or anything like that. And residential on the single family side, everybody knows homesteads for the most part, and you get 10% caps on your assessments. There's nothing like that in commercial. So they could, you know, go up 100%. They could go down. They can literally do whatever they want. So nothing's prohibiting them from doing that. In fact, haven't seen it as much recently because, again, I think they have better data now. But in the past few years, we were seeing quite a few, especially these smaller counties, where they would way overshoot a purchase price. In essence, just saying, well, come prove me wrong, because they wanted you to walk in with a closing statement and get that information because they had a lack of sales information. And the only way they could get it was to go so far beyond market that you had no choice really, but to provide that. And then they now have better data, you know, that they can use for the following year as well. So, to answer your question, there's really nothing that stops them from getting kind of wild with these values and going, you know, above and beyond what we're seeing in the market.
Yeah, that's quite sobering. I guess, you know, going to the point about, hope not being a strategy, you know, we cannot underwrite deals with the hope that the tax guy doesn't assess at sale price. So to that extent, Ryan, how should we as investors look to underwrite taxes on our deals? You know, we have used various rules of thumbs, 95% of sales price, for example, and then apply a millage rate to that, 90%. Do you have some general guidance of how underwriters should approach the tax implications post acquisitions for these sort of deals?
Yeah, I would say this is probably our most common question from our clients. And it does change from time to time, but where we're sitting right now, I would say across the board in Texas, I would say 90% is your kind of general rule of thumb for the year after acquisition. There's going to be a lot of nuances to it. One of it's just pure location. So all I mean by that is certain appraisal districts and counties are more aggressive than others. Travis County in Austin has been around 95%+ for half a decade now, where Harris County historically was probably closer to 85%. And they're, I would say, a lot closer to 90 now. And Dallas County, again, they're probably hovering close to 85, 90. But then Bexar County and San Antonio, they're 90 to 95%. So if you take all the major metros, I would say the average is going to be about 90% in general. That being said, and Robbie, you're very good at doing this. It always behooves you to go take a, get somebody like us, to go take a real good look at this, because within these counties, you're going to have classification issues, whether they consider you a class A, B, or C. You've got some markets that some are healthier than others. And so when you go look at how these comps look and these assessments on these comparable properties, That really gives you the best idea of what's going to happen, in my opinion. So, and all I mean by that is sometimes we see, even within, let's say, Harris County, if I'm saying 90%, I do see deals where they're going to be assessed closer to the 9,500% range, just given where current assessments already sit. And then I see other deals that are in the same county, just in a different location and maybe a different class, that are probably closer to 80%, to be honest. So it really depends on the specific situation. And we always ask, whenever we do any type of estimate like this, not only just the location and what you guys are paying and that sort of thing, but loan amounts come into it. Just as I was describing earlier, a lot of times they won't have the sale price, but they will have the loan from your deed. And so loan to value ratios play a huge impact on this. You know, putting a lot more cash down can kind of throw them off your scent of what you paid for it. Because a lot of times they will kind of dumb it down and use something like an 80% loan to value ratio just to be conservative, and their opinion of what you paid may be far less than what you actually paid. So, but to answer your question, I would say 90% is the answer, is the short answer. But I would always tell people to definitely get somebody like us involved to take a specific look at that property and see what it looks like currently and kind of what they think they're forecasting for the property in the future as well.
Got it. Just one quick follow-up question on the debt. You mentioned the database that the tax authorities have that access agency loans. Do they have similar access to bridge debt or private debt, for example, that you may bring onto the deal? Do they have that visibility as well?
No, not really. TREP has been interesting because that has changed the game a little bit, just being that we are a non-disclosure state. And this has been here recently the most data they've ever had. But it is specific to agency debt. So outside of that, the only way they're really going to know any other detail would be if your loan amount shows up on your deed, which, you know, 10 plus years ago, almost all the deeds in Texas said $10. And I, you know, most of the time now they're showing your loan amount. So that's changed a little bit. But again, it's kind of a gray area because now they start making assumptions. And so if they've got, you know, 10 sales in a submarket or something like that, and they're making all these assumptions, we can pick holes in it. It's a lot more difficult when they have actual appraisal amounts and confirmed sale prices. That's a little more difficult to combat than just the loan amount. So yeah, it's hard to get away from the loan amount, to be honest, because it is showing up in so many places now. But they don't really have access to further information outside of agency debt, so far, at least that where we're sitting today.
Brian, how much is that? You mentioned TREP. How much does that data cost? And how easy is it to get?
You know, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. I can tell you comparatively. I know CoStar, because we've subscribed to that for a long time, is incredibly expensive, and TREP is a fraction of it. I don't remember off the top of my head how expensive it is, but I know it's much more affordable. And it sounds like, from what I can tell over the past 2 to 3 years, somebody over at TREP has done a very good sales marketing job at going to all these appraisal districts and counties and getting these big contracts. Because we subscribe to it because internally we do want to know what they can see and have that information. But it's not a large expense for us, I can tell you that. And so I would imagine for these counties, it's a drop in the bucket for them as well. And I would assume that over time, and I think it'd be a pretty short amount of time, you're going to see almost all these counties subscribing to it here in the near future.
And one follow-up question on your response to Robbie's question is, do they treat Class A, B, and C differently?
Yes. So all counties are going to, they build income models in essence. So mass appraisal is really quite simple. They're going to say, if you are a Class A property, you know, everybody's got, let's say, 7 or 8% vacancy. They're going to throw an expense ratio on it and then a cap rate. And so they're going to kind of blanket a whole market and classification. And really the only difference you're going to see most of the time within that is going to be the different rent or concessions that they're giving to get to an effective rent. And that's going to kind of drive that whole income approach. So every county is going to have different opinions and different ways that they look at these income approaches. But to answer your question, yes. I mean, in A, B, and C, like using Harris County for an example, the B is going to have a higher expense ratio than an A because typically they have more age to them and higher expenses. The C is going to have even further higher expenses. And same with cap rates. You're going to have a higher cap rate for the B, the C, et cetera. So, they do model these differently, and there are specific nuances that make those differences, you know, based on the data that they're looking at. I would say, you know, again, since we're in Houston, specific to Harris County, the biggest, I guess, hurdle, I would say, with a new sale, if you are a Class B or C property going into this purchase, is that they will upclass you in the following year. So all I mean by that is it's technically not legal for them to, we call it sale chasing, to chase your sale. The tax code says that if they want to raise you 20-30%, whatever it is, they have to raise everybody around you at the same level. They cannot single you out because you sold more recently than somebody else. So the way Harris County has handled that for years is if you are a B or a C property, the following year, they will simply just make you from a C to a B now, put you in a different subsection of, you know, what these, where these values are. And at the end of the day, it's not that it's something we don't fight, and I wouldn't say it's hard to fight, but it's hard to get them off of that because it is truly an opinion at the end of the day. And, you know, they can go into a courtroom and argue that their opinion is valid as a Class B, even though it historically was a Class C, and just say, you know, our opinion's changed at this point, especially if it was a value add and there's remodels or anything happened to it, you know, in the meantime.
And it seems with all the tools that they have and, you know, the ability to look at loan values and, you know, make some assumptions, it's made your job harder. So, you know, what have you had to do to kind of stay ahead of that? And, you know, to not just say, okay, I'm going to come clean. Here's the PSA or the contract.
Yeah, no, it has made our job harder. I wouldn't lie and say it's easier. That's for sure. I mean, I've been doing this 16 years, and the amount of data that they have seems to just every year be more and more. So there, I think they have a better, and I say they being all appraisal districts, have a better pulse on the market than they did 5, 10, 15 years ago. So it is harder to keep, I would say, like a spread of, you know, being at 70 or 80% of what the market is. And that's why we're seeing more in the 90%+ range now. That being said, I mean, we've been doing this a long time, and a lot of people in this industry know kind of the tricks of the trade. And we're very good at, you know, we take as much information as we can get from our clients, you know, rent rolls, P&Ls, CapEx, whatever we can get. Bad news is good news in our industry. And so we sift through all of that, find what's useful to us, take the appraisal district's data, pick holes in that as well. And that combination is generally our success. So we, you know, don't have to provide everything legally. And so, you know, our file is generally probably half of the stuff we receive stays in our file and never leaves it. And the stuff we want to show ends up at the appraisal district. And then, like I said, having their information is very helpful. You know, it's nice to be able to see where they're coming from and pick holes in what they're doing before we ever even have to show what our real rent is or anything like that. Because a lot of times you have lower rent or lower expenses, and you honestly don't have a great case compared to how they're looking at it. So you got to get a little more creative with it and kind of find that. I always think about every file we look at every year, even if it's the same property I've worked for years, it's kind of like a puzzle. You know, we've got to kind of work through what we can do here to solve this problem, to get it lower and find a hook in essence that they're going to bite off on and reduce this value. And I mean, that's what we do at the end of the day.
Got it. Thanks, Brian. You know, on that point, you know, to the extent that post acquisition, we get the tax bill for the first year, let's say, and you know, as owners, we feel that the tax bill is higher than what we would like it to be or what we think it should be. How would we approach protesting that? And are you able to assess upfront the probability of it being reduced based on protest so that we don't spend a lot of cycles going through the process? Clearly expense in terms of time and cost, obviously. Can you give some guidance on how we should approach protest in general?
Sure. So when you're buying a property, I mean, the timing's very important because all of this is very deadline driven. And so, as I said earlier, values typically come out in the springtime, usually April. May's the appeal deadline. And then throughout the summer, June and July typically is when we're incredibly busy. We're going to these appraiser districts and handling all these hearings. Once that process is complete, if your consultant has gone to an ARB hearing, a formal hearing, you'll get a notice in the mail that gives you a 60-day window to file suit in district court. And generally, those deadlines are going to fall in August or September, generally. And so when you're buying a property, if you are buying, let's say, in the summer or in the early fall range, there may be a potential that there's a deadline coming up or approaching that you could miss just based on your closing timing. So I would always recommend that when you're looking at a property or if you're under contract to talk to the seller. Generally, they're going to have a consultant already working that property and get an update from them as to where they are in this appeal cycle. Let them know you are interested to receive that board order is what we call it. So it's a board order. And you want that documentation in your hands as soon as possible so that if for whatever reason you close a week after that deadline passed, at least you have the opportunity to get an appeal filed if you needed it and you can keep this active. Because we do see from time to time a buyer comes in and they may close in, let's say, October, and the deadline was the month prior, and they've lost that appeal opportunity at that point if they didn't communicate with the seller about their intention there. So that's a really large component of it, I would say, to just really stay on top of it and do your due diligence when you are under contract to make sure you understand what time of the year you're in. Given the protest cycle, but also to have, you know, an expert give you kind of just a bullet point of where they're at. Yes, we filed an appeal, we're scheduled for a hearing, you know, here's what our expectations are, and know that going in, I think is very helpful, because the problem is if you do miss these deadlines, there's a potential it's not fixable. So there's a lot of situations in the tax code where you can file corrections after the fact and fix situations. The problem you have is if the prior owner did file an appeal and attend a hearing, and then you miss that secondary deadline, there is no fixed. It's dead at that point. So if they did not file an appeal or attend a hearing, there's potential you could file a correction. It really just depends on the situation. But if they have attended a hearing and you just end up on the back end missing this lawsuit deadline, there really is nothing legally that anybody can do to fix it, unfortunately. And every year stands on its own. I know I'm kind of talking about lawsuits a little bit right now, but just so you know, appraisal districts, a lot of people like to think, well, if I was at 30 million last year and my rent grew 2 or 3%, well, that should just grow 2 or 3%. And the reality is kind of what I said in the very beginning of this is they're more interested in sales market information and they're tracking that. So if that supports a $10 million increase, well, they're going to do it. And so regardless, if you were in a lawsuit in the prior year and you spent attorney's fees, got appraisals, whatever you might've done in that process and arrived at a value that you guys settled at, there is real potential that the following year, there's no weight put on that value whatsoever, that it truly is in the past. And this new year is a new situation altogether.
Brian, super helpful. What, you know, with the rise in interest rates, rise in insurance, property taxes, What do you forecast for 2022 values? You know, would any of those things be helpful and push values down?
You know, it's an interesting question because we talk about this a lot in our office because we've seen a lot of change really since COVID with single family, just kind of a lack of affordable housing in general. Now we're seeing it in the past couple of months with interest rates, which that seems to be that will continue. And so there's, I think, a very high demand for apartments and multifamily, specifically from the tenant base. And so it's a real necessary component, not just within commercial real estate, but just within the U.S. and housing. And so I think it's a very strong sector. That being said, you know, we saw some of the lowest cap rates I've seen in my career here in the past year or so, 2.5 to 3.5 cap rates on vintage class B and C properties, you know, that don't seem like, honestly, they make a lot of sense on paper, to be honest. They're just a little skinny. And so now, to your point, if you have dramatic increases in taxes, insurance, and these other expenses, it's a real tough thing to combat when you're looking at debt service coverage ratios and things like that. So I'd like to say that I would think the market's going to cool off a little bit just because of interest rates and some of these things changing. That being said, these appraisal districts generally are still not at 100% of market value. So there is still potential that next year you're going to see increases again. And to take that a step further, appraisal districts in general lag the market always. And the reason for that is they're using historical data. For whatever reason, they don't really like to look at forecast or try to make assumptions on the future. They really like to look at what's black and white and what's already occurred. And so we see this every time there's a downturn. We saw it recently in office in Houston a few years ago, where the market peaks and when it does drop, you can see the following year when everything's going downhill, values can still go up because they're looking at the past 1 or 2 years of sales data that isn't relevant anymore. But that's what they have. And that's what they're harping on. And I would say the bigger the county, so the major metros, the slower that process is. So most counties probably lag the market 1 year, I would say, just because of using historical data. But you're going to see counties like Harris be closer to 2 years a lot of times. And it depends on the timing of when these changes occur in the year. But I would say in general, across the board, counties are lagging the market 1 to 2 years. So if we do see a cool off or a turn down, anything like that, there's a real potential that in 2023, they are still behind what they have in sales information for 2021. And they're going to use that as ammo to prop up these values even further, which we all know is inappropriate. and that's the frustrating part is as an owner investor, to have to deal with that. But it's why it's important to have somebody in your corner fighting it that understands this process, because it sometimes isn't logical and doesn't make sense to the average person that doesn't live this every day. But when you understand how appraisal districts operate and the type of data they're using, not that it's right, but you can at least understand why they're doing it. And it is unfortunate because I would say that at least what I've seen so far, the sales seem to still be at, I would say on a per unit basis, pretty much what I saw last year from what I've seen. I would think cap rates are going to slowly start ticking up though. And that might change things a little bit here in the short term.
Got it. Brian, for new investors entering the space, active and passive, will you be able to share some wisdom, both from a tax perspective and you mentioned cap rates and you're in this space, maybe bring to bear some of the insights you may have and give some thoughts on what should investors be thinking about entering this space? Any guidance there would be useful.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say is, so we handle a few hundred, call it close to 500 apartments out of Houston. And on top of that, throughout the year, we're going to get a lot of people asking us for tax estimates on purchase prices. So throughout a year, we see 1,000 plus P&Ls, rent rolls for apartments in Houston. And there's a difference in people that make very aggressive assumptions and people that make more conservative assumptions. And I guess that would be kind of what I would harp on most is I don't think there's anything wrong with having aggressive assumptions, especially if you think you're below market rent and you can improve this property, whatever the situation may be. It may be very valid. And that's all great. But I would always caution people to take the next step to say, okay, well, what are our uncontrollable situations? I mean, you've got, depending on your mortgage, if it's a floating rate, you've got taxes, which are generally one of the biggest expenses you're gonna have. And we all know how this can fluctuate. Insurance has been going up for the past couple of years pretty dramatically. So you take all that into account, on a more conservative level, can you still meet your returns? And to me, that's what probably matters most is, it's great if you can get a 20%+ IRR on a property with your assumptions. But if you back off of those a little bit and you're a little more conservative in those assumptions, can you still meet your required returns And if the answer is yes, I think it's a great deal. If the answer is no, it may give you kind of a red flag and some pause to maybe look at some more deals. Unfortunately, specific to apartments, it's been such a crazy market here in the past year or so. There's been just a lot of multiple offers on properties that it got very, very competitive. And so I think people were, I guess you would say, trying to win deals and getting away from probably these conservative situations that I'm describing. And I think that was generally what was happening in the second half of last year. And so I would just caution anybody that if you are going to invest in a property, especially if you're hands off and you're doing some type of syndication, that you are with a reputable firm or person that has a lot of experience doing this, knows what they're doing, like you guys, and does their homework on this stuff. They get people like us, third parties involved to verify their assumptions and make sure that it does make sense. Because at the end of the day, they are all going to be assumptions and we're taking, educated guesses on some of this stuff. But I think the more homework you do and the more data you collect from experts in these various fields, I think the more comfortable you become with an investment. And I just think that's very important to be able to sleep at night after you write a big check after you invest in something. So I would say that's probably my just best advice is, I think the apartment market's very, very strong. I think there's a huge need for housing in general. I don't think that's going away anytime soon. I think we've got a real lack of construction and for a variety of reasons that goes back decades in our country. And so I think that's here to stay. I really do. But there's a difference, and I think we're going to see this play out over the next few years when these balloon payments are coming due and people have to refinance properties, that you're going to have some people that are sitting pretty and some people that aren't. And the guys that aren't are the guys that made very, very aggressive assumptions that probably weren't justified. It would be my two cents.
Well, Brian, thank you so much for your time. This was super insightful, super helpful. How can our listeners get in touch with you?
Thank you. Great question. So you can always just go to our website. It's morrisonandhead.com. We've got all contact information, all of our personnel on there. Like I said, I run our Houston office, and you could get my phone number, email, everything off that website, to get in contact with us. And we're always happy to help out anybody that's trying to, dig a little deeper into these questions and figure out, what the future holds for these assessments and hopefully steer them in the right direction so they can make good, sound decisions.
Awesome. Well, thank you again. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. I appreciate your time.
All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Multifamily Rockstars. We hope this episode was helpful for your personal and professional growth. For more episodes and to learn more about investing in multifamily apartments, check out LifeChangingCapital.com.